Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh yes, because together is the best way that we are going to learn. Well, welcome everybody, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for October 24th, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I am so happy that you are here today. I have a jam-packed show for you today. A ton of health information that we're going to cover. But the main topic today is going to be about forgiveness. Oh, yes. Forgiveness. The power of forgiveness. Now, not just forgiveness for others, but forgiveness for yourself as well. It really is critical to your health, not just your emotional health, but what I'm going to show you is how powerful forgiveness, that idea, incorporating that into your life, can have a huge impact on your physical health as well. So the power of forgiveness on The Healthy Mind today. We're going to be covering the latest news on health in the second half of the program. You're going to want to stick around for this relationship stress and a new study that confirms physically how men and women react differently. And ladies, on this, you have the advantage here. So we'll talk about that. Also, we'll be covering yet another study that looks at the impact of smartphones and tablets and TVs on decreasing your ability to get to sleep. And this study specifically looking at children, just some really important news for you and your family. So we're going to be talking about the news, headlines. We have ourselves a heck of a program. So I'm really, really happy that you're here. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free monthly newsletter. Got to get October's out. I'm getting it out here in the next couple days. You can sign up for it right there on the homepage. And any questions you may have, don't hesitate to email me. The email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, now, forgiveness. The power of forgiveness. This is so important and probably one of the most important topics that I can cover on The Healthy Mind. The ability that we have to forgive others and probably more important, ourselves when things don't go right or when we've been wronged. But what does this really mean? What am I talking about when I talk about the concept of forgiveness? Well, there's a couple of definitions that I like that fairly accurately describe what happens when we forgive. Well, one way to look at this is that forgiveness is the act of pardoning or excusing yourself or someone else without harboring any resentment, truly being able to let it go. Another way to look at forgiveness is it is the act of compassionately releasing the desire to punish either yourself or someone else for an offense. And I kind of like those definitions. Now, that's a little bit of what forgiveness is, but what it doesn't mean, and this is important, is that we don't give up or relinquish the right to recognize that what might have happened to us is wrong and hurtful. It is the ability to let it go so that it doesn't continue to burn at you, while still recognizing and respecting with compassion that what was done was hurtful. It's so important because to be able to forgive either yourself or others is probably the cornerstone, really, of probably all of health, to tell you the truth. It certainly is in my neck of the woods in psychiatry and emotional illness. There is so much emotional pain that one goes through, whether it is depression or anxiety or insomnia, whatever it may be, that is based in so much pent-up anger and rage that once you're able to begin to let that go, you can't help but noticing that your mood improves. But also, anger and rage is at the heart, I believe, of much of the physical ailments, the physical illnesses that we face as a country, as a nation today. Hypertension, cardiovascular disease, chronic pain, especially chronic pain, which is my area of interest. In fact, scientists all over the world are looking at the relationship between forgiveness and our overall health and well-being. If you look, there's been research that has shown that people who are forgiving are less aware of being offended and hurt by others, and they have lower blood pressure. It's interesting. When you ask these individuals to recall a situation where they had been betrayed, in general, when we're asked to think about a time when we've been betrayed or deceived or hurt, our blood pressure normally is going to increase. But the research has shown for those who tend to hold grudges, can't let go of that anger or forgive, their blood pressure stays elevated for a much longer period of time. And other studies have shown that when people feel vengeful, when they have to have revenge, this greatly, greatly increases the level of stress in our body, and it impairs our health and our immunity. So the anger and the frustration that we have, it costs. It costs not only in the emotions, anger, anxiety, maybe sadness, and I don't mean clinical emotional illness, I mean for all of us, it costs something to us emotionally. But now what the research is starting to find out is that there is this mind-body connection. Aha, who would have thought, right? That links that anger to physical illness as well. But also, the power to forgive improves our physical health. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. But how do we get to that point? How is it that some people are forgiving? They can get over it. It doesn't bother them as much. And other folks, well, they hold grudges. They stay angry. They can't let it go. Now, a lot of that has to do with personality. A lot of it has to do with upbringing. But no matter what the reason is, this is where it's important. People, gosh, we're so unbelievably strong and powerful that we can learn. We can learn to forgive. No matter how hard it is for you to either give yourself a break or forgive yourself or others, it's possible to learn how to do that. And in that, you begin to feel better, not only emotionally, but physically as well. Especially in the work that I do with regards to emotion in the treatment of PPD, psychophysiologic disorders, and TMS, tension myositis syndrome. But forgiving, whether it's ourselves or others, it can be so hard. You know, it's tough when you feel betrayed or have been hurt that if you forgive, it feels like, well, someone's got away with something, right? Oh, that just bites at you. It bites at you. I can't do this because that means that someone got away with it. And that can be very, very powerful and prevents people from opening up and letting go. But the important part here, and as I try to have individuals see when I see them in my sessions, is to understand what is going on. The anger, the rage, what is in it for you, really? Why is it that it's so hard for you to forgive, for any of us to forgive? And a lot of it has to do with perspective. Really, with perspective. Now, I'm not trying to rationalize or justify why people are cruel to each other. But a lot of the anger that we can't let go of, whether we've been wronged or we've done it ourselves, we need to take a look at the entire picture. And I think this is where it is helpful for individuals to at least begin the process of making it a little easier to forgive themselves and perhaps others. A very important thing to realize here is when we talk about forgiveness, we're talking about forgiving the person, not the act. This is really important. Whether it's yourself or someone who has hurt you, forgiveness is for the person or ourselves, not the act that was hurtful. Now, what does this mean? Well, people are flawed. We, on some level, are all wounded individuals. All of us have had our triumphs, our tragedies, things that we have been so proud of, and then things about ourselves that we're ashamed of or we feel guilty about. And we come to every interaction with each other, all of us carrying our unique history. And things get triggered and arguments happen or conflicts arise or we react in a certain way based on everything we have been through. And in that, when we receive that hurt or that betrayal from another person, it goes through our lens of experience. And if it triggers something that is very, very painful, well, we are going to be hurt and we will defend. We can get very angry. We can get very upset and even become very, very hurtful, not only to others, but to ourselves as well. But the important thing here is when we begin to understand forgiveness, it is so important to be able to look at the other person who has hurt you, as we all are, imperfect, and we make mistakes. If we can begin to understand that and understand that people, we can all be so cruel to each other. But when that happens, what's important to realize is when someone is cruel to us, yes, it hurts, but how much is really about us? And I want to explain this a little bit. Probably the best way to do it is with an example so you can see what I mean. We're driving along in our car, and out of nowhere, someone pulls up to us and they're screaming and yelling or honking because maybe we rode up too close to them or we cut them off in an intersection back a block or two behind. We've all had that. We're kind of just sitting there and boom, someone is just vomiting their anger at us in a period of road rage, or maybe we're the ones who have gotten angry, right? It can be hurtful. I mean, we feel terrible that we have been attacked. And the initial reaction is, what the heck's going on with this guy? I mean, what right does he have to start yelling at me? And we can get angry. But stop there for a minute. How much of that was necessarily about us? Yes, that individual got angry at us, but I would argue that they got angry through us. Angry through us. I want you to think about that a little bit. Because if you can see that and at least accept it on some level, this is where it gets important with forgiveness. Because when people are cruel to us, yes, we feel it personally because we've been attacked. But there's also this other part on the other side, a human being, a flawed, hurt, wounded individual, much like we all are to some degree, who is directing emotions right at us, and we can be hurt. Now, let me be clear here. The action is wrong. It is hurtful. I'm not trying to rationalize or justify away why a person can be cruel to another individual. But in being able to really truly forgive, we have to be able to move outside of the initial emotion and really look at the entire picture. Forgiveness, when we grant it, is directed at the individual, not at the act. We don't look at the particular wrong, but we look at the woundedness, the hurt of the offender who directs that at us. This in no way justifies or rationalizes away the action. The person is still responsible for being hurtful. and in the wrong. But what you do from a distance is that you look and forgive, whether it's conscious or unconscious, that hurt, that suffering that motivates people to be cruel. And you let it go. And the same can be said when we forgive ourselves. So important. There's so many things that we feel guilty about, that we have shame about, that we wish we hadn't done or wish we could redo. But we can't take it back. But in the end, we have to look at ourselves and recognize that we are imperfect, that we're going to make mistakes, that we don't need to continue to crucify ourselves. And we allow forgiveness to enter into our heart and into our lives. And when you begin to do that, and I know you've experienced it already, but when you begin to do that, you begin to change. Because forgiveness is really the epitome of our potential and our strength. We know that we've been wronged or hurt, but we dare to step above it to transcend that hurt and authentically say, no, I have to let it go. I have to let it go. Whether it is anger and resentment towards another person or that is directed at ourselves. And when we begin to do that, when we begin to take that anger and that rage and that hurt and turn it into peace, through the process of forgiveness, we feel better. We feel stronger because there's so much more strength in forgiveness. And we reap the rewards, not only emotionally, but as emerging scientific evidence is showing us, we are reaping the rewards from forgiveness physically as well. Physically. The amazing power of forgiveness. Take the time to think about that and maybe explore that a little bit. If you aren't sure how the best way is for you to incorporate that more into your life, seek out help. Doesn't necessarily need to be a therapist, but research it. Look around, ask other people, because it is important. It's a skill, and we have to learn it and get better at it. But when we do, life gets better. That is the power of forgiveness. And that, my friends, is such an amazing step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, another busy week for health news. The first story, this comes out of Penn State University, a new research study, and it had to do with relationship stress and conflict. The headline, Relationship Stress, Why Men and Women React Differently. Now, what the researchers at Penn State University found were that men and women who are about to have a baby or expecting a baby have different reactions to stress as it relates to conflict in one's relationship. And in addition to that, they found that recovery from that conflict, the arguments or whatever stress they're having, can be different for both men and women. So what did they find on the differences between men and women? Well, first of all, the researchers found that men's increased stress levels during a conflict depended on the level of hostility that was expressed between the two people. And the way that they looked at the stress level in men and women was by checking the level of the stress hormone cortisol in the blood. What they found was that more hostility in an argument led to a larger stress reaction in men. They made more cortisol. But that the stress levels of pregnant women during the discussion were not linked at all to hostility. Now, the researchers also wanted to see, how do we cool down? How do we recover from an argument? What are our stress levels? And how they did this was to measure cortisol levels, the stress hormone level, about 20 minutes after a conflict was over. And what they found was that the recovery from an argument did not differ for men and women with low levels of anxiety. But if you were a guy with a high level of anxiety, you didn't recover as well. The interesting thing was, if you were a female with a high level of anxiety, you recovered more quickly if there was a lot of hostility during the discussion. Just very, very interesting. According to one of the researchers at Penn State, Dr. Mark Feinberg, quote, "Hostility and negativity in a relationship has been shown to have a major impact on mental health and the future well-being of the couple. It is especially important to understand how relationship conflict may affect stress during pregnancy, as maternal stress has been linked to health problems for both the mother and the child. And men who have a difficulty dealing with stress could end up reacting angrily to future disagreements." End of quotes. So again, in review, if couples are arguing and there's a lot of hostility, it turns out that men have a much stronger stress reaction, as is measured by cortisol. Now, this doesn't mean that women don't necessarily get stressed out as much as men. The researchers feel that it might be due to the fact that women's cortisol levels are already high during pregnancy. So because cortisol levels are already high, maybe it just didn't reflect the true level of stress reaction. Now, according to Dr. Feinberg again, quote, "We found that all men appeared to find hostility stressful. This was also linked to more persistence of elevated stress. On the other hand, generally anxious women experienced relatively more prolonged stress when there were lower levels of hostility and negativity during the discussion." Remember, when there were high levels of hostility and negativity, women didn't seem to have as much reaction. Back to Dr. Feinberg. "Women find the airing of differences, even when the tone turns negative, to be reassuring that the couple is engaged with each other." And he felt that this would be particularly important for women during the vulnerable period of their first pregnancy. And also, it could be useful to couples to understand that they need to carefully balance what they discuss, particularly difficult relationship topics, because men and women will react differently. The stress of a relationship and the differences between men and women in the way that they react, particularly when a couple is having a child. Okay, parents, this next story is for you as it relates to your kids. The headline, "Electronic devices in kids' bedrooms is linked to obesity and poor sleep." This was a new research study that came from the University of Alberta in Canada. And what the researchers found was that children who spend too much time at night on the computer or TV, they didn't get enough rest, and they suffered from poor lifestyle habits. Now listen to this. The researchers found that as little as 1 hour of additional sleep by children decreased the odds of being overweight by 28% or obese by 30%. And children with one or more electronic devices in their bedrooms, a TV, a computer, a cell phone, were also far more likely to be overweight. Amazing. According to the study co-author, Dr. Paul Veglers, quote, "If you want your kids to sleep better and live a healthier lifestyle, get the technology out of their bedroom." Dr. Vogler said that this research was the first to connect the dots on the relationship between sleep, diet, and physical activity among kids. Now, this was about 3,400 students in grade 5 that were studied. Half of these students had either a TV, a DVD player, or a video game console in their bedroom. 21% had a computer, and 17% had a cell phone. And 5% of these kids had all three types of devices. Sure, why not? Go for broke. Now, you think your kids are actually going to sleep when you turn out the light? Oh, no. 57% of the students reported using electronics after they were supposed to be asleep. with watching TV and movies being the most popular activity. And a full 27% of the students engaged in three or more activities after bedtime. So much for tucking them in. The researchers found that the students with access to one electronic device were almost 1.5 times as likely to be overweight as kids with no devices in the bedroom. And that increased to over 2.5 times for kids with three devices in their bedroom. Goodness. One of the other authors in the study, Dr. Christina Fung, noted that children today are not sleeping as much as previous generations. And two-thirds aren't getting the recommended hours of sleep per night. We all know a good night's sleep is linked to better school performance, less mood problems, and other positive health outcomes. Wow. These electronic devices, you know, we've talked about this before on The Healthy Mind, how the light from these devices can keep people awake, both kids and adults. But this is a brand new wrinkle. Again, let me re-quote Dr. Paul Veglers here. Quote, if you want your kids to sleep better and live a healthier lifestyle, get the technology out of the bedroom. And I think that is very wise advice. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Decreased gene activity is likely involved in childhood risk for anxiety and depression. Decreased activity of a group of genes may explain why in young children, the fear center of the anxious brain can't learn to distinguish real threats from the imaginary. This, according to a new University of Wisconsin study. The next headline. Self-confidence is the secret to workplace advancement. The old saying, fake it till you make it, might actually be sound professional advice, with new University of Melbourne research finding that self-confidence is a key determinant of workplace success. And finally, the headline, health behaviors in midlife significantly increase odds of successful aging. Well, this, at least for me, is good to know. Engaging in a combination of healthy behaviors such as not smoking, moderate alcohol consumption, exercise, and eating fruits and vegetables daily makes it significantly more likely that people will stay healthy as they age. This, according to a new study published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Imagine that. Engaging in healthy behaviors results in a healthy body and a healthy mind. And speaking of the healthy mind, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free monthly newsletter. A special thanks to all of you who have become subscribers. I really do appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything, I want to hear from you. Keep those emails coming. And forgive me that it's taking me a little bit of time to get back to you, but I really do appreciate it. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's Peter at thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.